listener production. Hi, I'm Sasha Barbagat. Welcome to The Briefing. In part three of our series on sex work in 2024 yesterday, we heard the personal story of Victorian MP Georgie Purcell, who was outed as a stripper at uni and has since turned the devastating incident into a strength in her political career. Whether it's in person or online, in secret or out in the open, sex work is and has always been happening all around us in Australia. So let's say you've decided online sex work is something you're interested in doing. Can you still make bank, or is the market so crowded now that there's little room for new entrants?
I've bought property, I bought land, I've taken my mum on trips, I support my family, buy a new car, whatever it is I want to do. Retire by the time I'm 40. 10 years, I'll be set to make whatever choice I want to do.
In the second half of today's episode, we speak to one of Australia's most successful OnlyFans and adult content creators to find out. But first, let's get all the day's news headlines with Bensyon Siebert. It's Tuesday, April 16.
There's been another horrific stabbing attack in Sydney, this time a 15-year-old boy targeting a church leader and parishioners at a church service in Sydney's western suburbs. A live stream caught the moment the boy approached the altar of the Christ the Good Shepherd Church in Wakeley, stabbing Bishop Murray Emanuel. Churchgoers quickly moved to subdue him, but it's understood a number of people were injured along with the attacker. Thankfully, none of those harmed suffered life-threatening injuries. Police attended the scene and arrested the boy, but chaos soon broke out outside with a crowd of people gathering to demand they bring out the attacker.
Apparently there were 2,000 people, Bensyon. That's the number that some of the TV channels are reporting this morning. Riot police had to be called in to move this crowd along. Bottles and bricks were thrown at officers. One officer is now in hospital with a broken jaw as well, and we've got reports that paramedics too were injured, which is just horrific. Officers took the 15-year-old boy to hospital and they sent out a media alert asking news organisations not to reveal where he was because of the fear that this crowd was seeking retribution, which is, you know, just tragic. And after everything that's gone on in Sydney in the last few days, it just feels like another blow, I think, for people. And look, let's bring you the latest on Bondi while we are talking about it. Our New South Wales Police Commissioner Karen Webb has admitted that it appears the man who killed six at Bondi Junction Westfield on Saturday afternoon had been targeting women, and that is forming part of their investigation. Couchy's parents, who Joel Couchy is the man who carried out the attack, his parents put out a statement, but they actually spoke to the media yesterday afternoon. Let's have a listen to what his dad had to say.
My son, and I'm loving a monster. To you, he's a monster. To me, he was a very sick boy. Believe me, he was a very sick boy.
Clearly very distressed there, Bensyon, as you can imagine. They did also speak about why their son might have targeted women. That was a question put to them by the media who was gathered on their front lawn. And they said that he was desperate to have a girlfriend and he was, quote, frustrated that he didn't. So, as I said, whether Joel Couchy was specifically targeting women is forming part of the police investigation now.
A defamation lawyer says it would be a bad decision for Bruce Lerman to appeal yesterday's remarkable federal court judgment. Lerman lost his defamation case against Network 10 and Lisa Wilkinson, who he was suing over an interview that aired on The Project in 2021, in which Brittany Higgins went public with allegations she was raped by a Liberal staffer at Parliament House in 2019. Defamation lawyer Justin Quill, who worked on the Channel 10 case, has told The Project that'll likely be the end of the defamation proceedings.
I would have thought it'd be a bad decision for him to appeal. I'd be confident that we would hang on to the judgment. So I'd be surprised if he appealed.
Lerman's team had argued the interview identified him as the person Higgins had been accusing of rape, with lawyers for Ten and Wilkinson using the truth defence, that is, they had to prove the rape actually happened. Justice Lee found in their favour, saying, based on the balance of probabilities, Lerman raped Higgins in Parliament House after a night out in 2019.
Yeah, and we heard from Lisa Wilkinson, who ran the interview. She addressed the media outside the court following the decision.
I sincerely hope that this judgment gives strength to women around the country.
Bensyon, this was really extraordinary to watch this trial and this case play out. Justice Michael Lee allowed the entire thing to be live streamed on YouTube. And I was one of those people that was tuning in most days towards the end of last year, watching what was happening. And it's worth noting as well, Justice Lee came out with some absolute zingers. One of them, he said, having escaped the lion's den, Mr. Lehrman made the mistake of coming back for his hat, which I just saw all over Twitter yesterday afternoon. And Justice Lee was pretty scathing of both witnesses, both star witnesses as well, Bruce Lehrman and Brittany Higgins. It's worth noting he said there were inconsistencies in both of their evidence. But I think there is a feeling among a lot of people that this has been a pretty ugly chapter to watch play out, and there will probably be some relief among the public that this might be the end of it for now, at least. It, as we said, an appeal is pretty unlikely. But, you know, the chance does still exist that it could return to the criminal courts. And the burden of proof there is much higher, it's worth noting as well, beyond a reasonable doubt. And that is not what we got yesterday. We got on the balance of probabilities. And look, if you would like to hear more about the decision and analysis of the verdict, we've got a full breakdown available right now in your feeds with veteran investigative reporter Kate McClymont. We put that out yesterday afternoon.
Former US President Donald Trump was in court in New York overnight for the first day of his long-awaited hush money trial. He is the first former American president to be tried in a criminal court. Trump is accused of paying the equivalent of about $200,000 Australian dollars to porn star Stormy Daniels back in 2016 so she'd keep quiet about having sex with Trump on a night back in 2006. Daniels says she was paid the money by Trump's then lawyer Michael Cohen to stay quiet about it in the lead up to the 2016 election. Cohen is expected to give evidence against Trump.
And the former president is facing 34 charges, which attract a penalty of 4 years behind bars. And we saw the jury selection process begin overnight. And as you mentioned, it is the first time a US president, former or current, has faced a criminal trial. But it is worth noting, Bencion, that does not stop him from running in November, even if he's found guilty.
No, there's nothing in the US Constitution that bars him, even if he's literally behind bars. Meanwhile, the prosecution has asked Justice Merchan to fine Trump $4,800 for the three social media posts that they say violate the judge's gag order. Now, I'm not sure $4,800 is going to mean much to Donald Trump, but there we go. The judge confirmed that he'll hold a hearing on the possible gag order violation on the 24th of April. And it is also worth noting that Trump is likely to face a relatively hostile jury in the Democrat-leaning area. The youth curfew in Alice Springs is coming to an end this morning, and authorities are torn on what to do next. The three-week curfew for under 18-year-olds has led to a drop in youth crime rates. Mayor Matt Patterson says long-term solutions need to be implemented, including increased resources.
Police are spending 80% of their time on domestic violence, which is why we don't have enough police. But we need to look at infrastructure, safe accommodation for kids, whether it's a youth foyer. I think that's a concept that works elsewhere in the country. We're the only jurisdiction without one.
Matt Patterson there.
Bencion, it's been a really heavy few days of news, so let's get you across something to feel good as you go into your day or go about your day. And this story is a personal favourite of mine, as you all might know by now. So apologies if you hate this story, because I love it. Peggy the Staffy and Molly the Magpie, the unlikely besties from the Gold Coast, have finally been reunited after more than a month apart. So they got international attention last month when Queensland Environmental Authority seized the bird because his owners, who found him as a chick, did not have the right license to keep him. But after petitions and appeals to the Premier, and even a shout out from world-famous surfer Kelly Slater, Molly has now been returned to them. In a statement, Juliet Wells and Reese Mortensen said it was a really exciting moment to be back with Molly. And the, quote, wiggly bottoms were in full force when they got him back to Peggy. I'm sure referring to the dog's wiggly bottoms. Although it's worth noting, the magpie, Molly, had started, there's video of Molly barking like a dog because magpies are great mimics, right? So growing up around dogs, instead of doing its tradition, I'm not going to attempt it, maybe I will, instead of doing that, It's barking. So anyway, I just thought, let's, you know, Katrina and I have spoken about this a few times, but now we actually have the moment. They're back together. It's worth noting as well, the couple will have, they do have a license now. They cannot make money from Molly, so no book deals, no social media stuff that's earning them any dosh. They can keep the bird, but they're going to be monitored as well. So a great, great story. Nice to see something positive happening in the world. And Bension, you've worked really hard on our Sex Work in 2024 series. Next up is the final chapter of that, and it's your interview with one of the highest earning OnlyFans stars.
A lot of people did a lot of things during COVID, and especially COVID lockdowns, that they never might have considered before. It seemed like everyone was suddenly learning how to make sourdough, or trying to copy a TikTok dance trend, or reevaluating their really important relationships. It was also a time when a lot of people experimented with doing online sex work for the first time. Whether that's OnlyFans, porn streaming, FinDom, selling pics, or any one of the many, many ways it's now possible to make money selling sex online. But can you still make good money doing sex work online if you started today? Or has the market become so crowded since COVID that it's just not worth bothering? Nova Hawthorne is one of Australia's most successful adult content creators. Nova, thanks so much for joining us on The Briefing.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Where does your story with sex work start?
Okay, so let's just say it was an accident. Uh-huh. my involvement in sex work, I fell into it through desire, through an interest. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd watched Secret Diary of a Call Girl growing up and thought that was really exciting. I saw a billboard that said tabletop dancing and I said, oh yeah, that sounds amazing. I want to do that. And I'd started by posting pictures of myself online just for fun, for validation, for entertainment. Mm-hmm. And I was offered money for a video call from that, and then I never looked back, kept going. I worked in strip clubs, I danced, I've worked in brothels, I've worked as an independent escort, as a sugar baby, and now I've made the transition to online adult entertainment, OnlyFans, webcamming, streaming, and professional porn. I think the first time I ever kind of did any paid work, mm-hmm. it would have been like 2016. Mm-hmm. So that's when I started getting involved, and then full time as my sole source of income since 2019.
What was your journey with OnlyFans? Mm. When did you start doing that and why?
When I was moving to Melbourne to finish my social work degree, mm-hmm. and I started dancing in a strip club in Melbourne, and OnlyFans started becoming this thing that we were doing on the side to make a little bit of extra money, mm-hmm. you know, when the clubs were quiet or we couldn't work. I thought, I'm a stripper, I'm an entertainer, I like to dance. I'll make like videos of me giving lap dances, mm-hmm. or videos of me dancing around a pole, and it evolved from there.
What was it like at the start? Did you make much money?
I was absolutely stoked when I got to the point where I had 17 people subscribe to me, all paying their $12 USD a month and uh-huh. and maybe a little bit extra for payments. But it was slow to start, and no one that I knew was taking it too seriously. It was like a side gig. It was kind of new. We didn't know anyone that was killing the game yet in early 2019.
Can I ask, mm-hmm. how much money have you made on OnlyFans now?
Well, OnlyFans isn't my main career point. Mm-hmm. So I think with OnlyFans, I've probably made about $150,000 in a couple of years. But with when you add in streaming, you add on other online adult platforms, mm-hmm. I'm making up to $400,000 a year.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So, sorry, just for people who don't know listening, what do you mean by those other streaming
platforms?
Okay,
yeah. So OnlyFans is just one website where you can do sex work online. Mm. And that's mostly pre-recorded videos and chatting with fans and selling content. I also really love and do a lot of live streaming. So I'm a cam girl, you know, those ads that are on porn sites and says, hey, look, there's live girls, you know, waiting to talk to you. They're not as scam, they're real. And I'm one of them and I do really, really well. So live streaming is my main passion in the adult online entertainment.
What has that kind of cash allowed you to do in your own life?
Completely independent, you know. I've bought property, I bought land, I've taken my mum on trips, I support my family, you know, my niece is going to need braces so I can help her out. But also for me, just to start my own business and do travel, buy a new car, whatever it is I want to do, retire by the time I'm 40, 10 years, I'll be set to make whatever choice I want to do.
Do you have to go to like specific accountants? Like for purposes and stuff?
That, I think that's a misconception as well. So there's a lot that market themselves as being specific to the industry, which is really good when someone's starting out and they don't know where to begin. Yeah. And I did start with an industry-specific accountant and they were fantastic, but once my affairs started getting more complex and involved things outside and that not being just a sole trader, then I had to move to someone who was a more, you know, across the board. But the person I ended up choosing does have industry-specific knowledge, but with a mainstream firm.
Obviously, you have a very popular Instagram. You're coming on this podcast. You're very open about what you do.
Yes.
There are a lot of people who like to do sex work or would like to do sex work online who don't want to be open with what they do. Do you think that it's possible to make money that way?
I will say it's more difficult to be anonymous completely. Say you're not showing face. It's harder. You need to have more of a shtick. You need to have your niche. You need to be really good at marketing. Most of the job in online sex work is being a whiz at marketing. So I have a friend who is in the US and she doesn't show her face. Mm-hmm. She doesn't shoot with men. She only takes content with herself and with her female friends. And she's top 0.01% of all earners on OnlyFans. So yes, I would say the challenges are stacked against you, but it is possible.
There's this phrase that people use about OnlyFans these days, especially sort of post-COVID saturated market, where people say, you know, there are so many creators on there and so many people doing it really well. Is it possible now, starting up, to make proper money on that platform?
I mean, there's always opportunity to, but the misconception is that it's easy, that anyone can make an OnlyFans and succeed. You know, if you've got a hot body or if you can use toys, you can do well, but it's just not the truth. OnlyFans as a platform doesn't have its own internal search function. So if you're wanting to get people to join, you need to be really good at marketing. You need to have a following. You need to have a fan base first. So which is why I would recommend if someone's wanting to do that kind of thing, they should do streaming first, because then at least with streaming, they have the traffic, they buy the traffic, and you can be found that way, and then you can funnel them into your other areas of work.
What are your fans like?
My fans are so interesting. I actually love them so much. They've followed a journey with me. I was chatting with a fan yesterday. He's been with me for over 4 years. And it's just normal people. These are people who are working professional careers. They're working, you know, blue-collar jobs. They're all over the country, mostly Australian. But I find I have a lot in the US and some in Germany.
Do you ever find with your fans, because they've paid a subscription, that there's a sense of entitlement, or have you gone through any kind of abuse on that platform?
Oh, yeah. I have a platform that has a tier and it's called Be My Husband, my one and only, my one true love. And this is like a special spot for one person that they have undivided attention. Mm-hmm. And there was a time that I was traveling. I was on a plane, didn't have any Wi-Fi, and I couldn't reply to that person for 6 hours. And when I got back, they were extremely upset. I had copped paragraphs and paragraphs of abuse, that I wasn't there, that I wasn't reachable. God. And I don't like have anyone else replying for me. It is always me. So, and if that's what people are wanting from my experience, which I think it is what they want to just be able to speak to me, then they need to know that I can't be there all the time replying to them.
How do you keep yourself safe from weirdos on the internet, I suppose?
Weirdos are out there, that's true. I had some times recently that I have had someone stalk me. They had gone as far to find out which university I went to, which year I'd graduated, and they watched the entire six-hour live stream of the graduation day of my university to see me walk across the stage to find my name. And I thought that was just such an intrusion of my privacy. So to stay safe, I really need to not share too much about me, which is difficult when I want to be so genuine and authentic.
I suppose that there's a stereotype in the porn industry, like I suppose with elite athletes, that there's a time limit on how long you can do a career like this. Yeah. Do you feel that way?
I think people would always say that, no matter what it is, you say, oh, you're getting a bit old for that. But I do have the option to retire completely by the time I'm 40, and I don't think I will. I think I want to be involved in the industry. There's a market for everything. Some of the top earners I know are in their 50s.
Has it been hard navigating personal relationships and your career?
Discussing boundaries was one of the things we had to talk about. Like, I don't film adult content with men. Mm-hmm. I choose to only do girl-girl because that's something I had talked about when beginning my relationship with my partner. That's not something he was comfortable inviting into the relationship. And I agreed. I said, yep, if that's a term of our relationship, that's fine with me. And it's been okay. And it hasn't impacted my career at all.
What about, I suppose, family, friends?
I live in a wonderful little bubble of support, and I've curated my circle to just be supported. And when I came out with my family and said, hey, look, I'm in the adult industry, I'm doing content, I was doing sugaring at the time, the only questions my family had was, is it legal? Is what you were doing legal? And are you safe? You know, is this a choice you've decided to make? And once I'd answered that, they were so fine. And it's just been nothing but love.
And you've got this bubble of support, which is really wonderful. What would you say about where we're at as a society in general about sex work?
For the most part, I think things are getting better. General consensus, people who live in cities, especially young people around my age, are super supportive. I don't get much hate. Sometimes I wish I got more pushback because then I can make content about having this pushback and negativity, but it's just not there for the most part. I've had to be resourceful in the business world. When I was going for a loan for a house or applying for credit cards, I needed to do my research in which banks were going to be accepting of me or when I was chatting with real estate agents, when they asked me what I do, I don't want probing questions. So yes, in the professional world, I think there's some pushback, but people do take you seriously when they can see you being serious about it.
Finally, would you have any advice to someone starting out in this industry in 2024?
Research. I'm a researcher, so definitely find those connections, find the networks, find someone that inspires you. There's lots of really good industry professionals that are having podcasts, that have YouTube shows, that offer mentoring sessions to really give you the insider knowledge. If you're going to learn about it, learn it from a sex worker. Learn from the industry themselves. Don't try and do it all on your own because that's when you're going to fumble and wish you sought help sooner.
Nova Hawthorne, thanks so much for joining us on The Briefing.
Thank you so much for having me. It was wonderful to chat with you today.
Nova Hawthorne there. That's all for The Briefing today and our final episode in our series on sex work in 2024. If you've enjoyed this series or any of our other episodes, please share them with a friend or two. Meantime, check your feed again from 6 a.m. tomorrow for your morning briefing. I'm Bension Siebert. Thanks for joining me.
Listener.